This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Moreland Garden Club. This is at the East Moreland Garden, which is at 2425 Southeast Bybee, which is at Southeast 27th. Large variety of perennials, herbs, native plants, organic tomato starts. Kids, there's even a kids section there, so a lot of things for sale there. You can contact Marty at this number for more information, 503-771-3710. That's in Southeast Portland. Also in, well, not in Southeast Portland, but in on Southeast Division, but to Gresham, actually, the Petal Pusher Garden Club annual plant sale at this will be held at the Covenant Presbyterian Church at 18630 Southeast Division Street in Gresham. Hanging baskets for Mother's Day and perennials, annuals, native plants, tubers, vegetables, that's probably vegetable starts, herbs, nursery stock, including ornamentals, shrubs, trees, at unbelievably great prices, it says here. That's the Petal Pusher Garden Club. And then, finally... Oh, no, that's the same one there, just a flyer there. So that's what I've got. If you have an event that you would like us to publicize, please send it to us either at my email here at KBOO, or you can even mail it to KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th in Portland, Oregon. I don't know what the zip code is here. 214, our ace engineer.
997214.
Okay. Right. That's right. Now, tomorrow, just as a little preface here, want to get us into Katie talk about her project, is the Fruit Hunters. This is a great series, and this is a great film here. Let me just read you this that I received from the Hollywood Theater about the Fruit Hunters, about the film here of the Fruit Hunters travels across culture, history, and geography to show how intertwined we are with the fruits we eat. Our guides are devoted fruit fanatics. Movie star Bill Pullman. I'll ask you, Katie, do you know who Bill Pullman is? Kind of?
I recognized his picture when I saw it on the promo,
okay.
But that's pretty much it.
All right, well, we're one for three here then. As far as, I've heard that name too.
I haven't heard the name.
Movie star Bill Pullman's obsession leads him on a crusade to create a community orchard in the Hollywood Hills. We do that in the Sabin Hills. Adventurers Norris Lettuceman, I don't know if I butchered that name, and Richard Campbell scour the jungle for rare mangoes, hoping to intervene before the plants are steamrolled by industrialization. Pioneering scientist Juan Aguilar races to breed bananas resistant to a deadly fungus that threatens the worldwide crop. Keeping that in mind, bananas. I'm going to tie zucchinis to bananas later on. And fruit detectives, including Isabel Dalla Raj, I don't know how to pronounce these names, Ragione, investigate Renaissance-era paintings for clues, hoping to rediscover lost fruits. It's kind of fun, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, there are the fruits themselves, presented in all their mouthwatering glory. Chirimoyas, ice cream beans, durians, and more. A cinematic odyssey through nature and commerce, the Fruit Hunters will change not only the way we look at what we eat, but how we view our relationship to the natural world. Sounds good. I'll be there. But also, after the film, will be a panel, including 50% of, comprising 50% of who is here in this room right now. Jim and Katie will be part of this. So Jim will, obviously, with One Green World, and Joni Cooper there, the president of the home, it's not the, it's just President Home Orchard Society. There's no the in.
No, not capitalized the, but
yes,
I think
right.
It's appropriate to say of the.
President Home Orchard Society. Katie Kolker, yes, the executive director of the Portland Fruit Tree Project, and Harriet Fossenfess, author of The Householder's Guide to the Universe and an expert fruit preserver. All have been, something happened here. What happened here? Oh, something happened to my my headphones here.
I think you're so excited, Glenn.
There we go. I slapped the table.
Slapped the table.
Right. So all have been on the dirt bag before, so I appreciate that. All right.
You know, something else that I've heard about, and maybe you can confirm this, but the Hollywood Theater, I believe next door to it, has a pizza restaurant that's connected to the theater in some ways, and we're planning on coming early to take advantage of that. So and check out what the pizza's like. Sounds like
fun. Okay. And that's not an offer that Jim's buying. It's just that he will be there.
Yeah. Anybody wants to come and talk fruit, it'd be fun.
Yeah. Okay. That's right next door.
Yeah.
All right, Katie. The Portland Fruit Tree Project, you founded this organization?
That's right. Yeah, about 7 years ago.
What was the impetus for that?
Well, as many folks who are listening to this program probably have seen around the city, there are just thousands of fruit trees in people's yards, parking strips, all over that aren't being harvested. Well, now since the Portland Fruit Tree Project started, they're being harvested much more. But about 7 years ago, I just got sick of seeing all this fruit going to waste. And I knew there were so many folks in our community who have limited access to fresh produce and, you know, struggle to feed their families healthy food. So just thought that there was this clear connection that needed to be made between this incredible, valuable resource, fresh fruit, and folks who could use it. So we just started bringing people together, organizing folks to harvest in community harvesting events. Half of the fruit goes home with the harvest volunteers, and the other half we distribute to local food pantries. So that's how we started, and it's basically been growing ever since.
How do you locate these trees?
For the most part, folks come to us. So when we first began the program, we just started publicizing through like neighborhood newsletters and just flyering at different community centers and things like that, asking folks to register their trees with us. So people who have fruit trees sign up with us to have their trees harvested. But now it's a lot of word of mouth. And then we also do, you know, info booths at different community events. We have Tree Scout volunteers, who are folks who sign up to help us register trees in their neighborhoods. So they get to go out and look around their neighborhood for trees that aren't being picked, knock on people's doors, tell them about the program, and ask if they want to share their fruit. So all the trees that we harvest are registered by their owners. So we're not doing any guerrilla gleaning or anything like that. We're just working in coordination with tree owners all over the city to register their trees. We do site visits in advance of each harvest to make sure the fruit is good enough quality and enough quantity to and accessible to harvest with a group of volunteers, and then we pick.
For the homeowner themselves, how does it work? Once they get signed up, do you come back year after year until they say no more?
We don't automatically go out and harvest. We actually ask the tree owners to contact us about 2 weeks before they think the fruit's going to be ready to pick. So they basically request a harvest every year. Because at this point, we have thousands of trees registered, so we're not really able to monitor all the trees. We depend on the tree owners to do some monitoring, and then we go out and do a site visit and then schedule a harvest.
Are you able to keep up?
Yeah. The first few years, you know, we just had a flood of tree owners register their trees. When we first started, we weren't quite sure. We knew there were going to be a lot of folks interested in the fruit. We knew there would be a lot of folks interested in coming out to harvest, but we weren't quite sure how into the idea tree owners would be of inviting a group of volunteers into their private property. But yeah, folks love hosting harvesting events, and it's really quite a service to the tree owner if they're not using all the fruit. It can be can produce quite a mess if the fruit falls and is rotting on the ground, or, you know, people hate seeing that fruit go to waste. So we have had a lot of interest. But the last couple of years, yeah, we've been able to keep up with it. Last year we harvested hundreds and hundreds of trees. So,
goodness. All right, Kurt, I think this is time for our first, not musical break, but our first ticket giveaway. So let's just hit them with the theme there. You got that ready to go here? Yes, it's time for the Garden Snipper, part one. Oh, I caught him off guard there. Well, maybe. There we go. All right. Let's see what we know here. Katie, I asked you to. Would you be willing to ask that question that I mentioned earlier?
Sure.
Okay, Katie's going to present the Garden Stumper, the first Garden Stumper question. And the first caller that gets the correct answer to this will get two pairs of tickets to the Fruit Hunters, which is tomorrow.
One pair of tickets.
Oh, excuse me, one pair of tickets, two tickets. Thank you, Jim. One pair of tickets to the Fruit Hunters at the Hollywood Theater. What time does that start? 7 o'clock?
7:30.
Okay. Yeah. Very good. All right. So, Katie.
So, the Portland Fruit Tree Project harvests all different types of fruit all around the city. Can you guess which type of fruit we harvest the most of in terms of poundage, that we harvest the largest number of pounds this past year, 2012?
Beautifully. Beautifully put. Good question. If you know the answer to that or want to take a guess, 503-231-8187. That's for one pair of tickets to the Fruit Hunters. Okay. Good morning, Tracy. You're with the Dirtbag.
Oh, hi. So I've been trying to follow the fluoridation debate, and I'm opposed to fluoridation, but, you know, there are some things that are confusing for me, and I'm just wondering what are some environmental effects, or if you have concerns for bees and, you know, our gardens.
Yeah. Well, Jim, you have any have you thought about that at all? I've thought about the other chemicals that are already in our water, the chloramine, which is chlorine and ammonia, and they can act as fungicides. You know, so I sometimes wonder about, well, what are they doing to the organisms in the soil? But the empirical evidence is, you know, we've been using this water for decades with those chemicals in there, and we need supplemental water in the summer, so everybody uses it to garden, and we still grow a pretty good garden. So I don't know is the answer.
As I understand it, fluoride is a naturally occurring element, and it's just the concentration that could possibly have some effect. But from what I understand, the concentration is very low. So, you know, at our farm, we have highly mineralized water, you could say. I mean, it's a lot of stuff in it, because it comes from a well. So, and, you know, our plants do fine. I don't think it'd be an issue with the concentrations mm-hmm. they're proposing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about this issue really in terms of how it affects soil quality, but it is fluorosilic acid, which I assume might lower the pH, so that could affect garden soil a little bit.
But yeah, I imagine just ever so slightly. I mean, it's so small of a concentration that compost would have a much greater effect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why I reminded of this, but sometime that this is too much to get into. It was a story I heard from the billions and billions of cosmos. What was it? Gosh, I'd be lost without Kurt, our ace engineer here. Carl Sagan, yeah. He was saying that, you know, that he was in the hospital or something, and the nurse standing over him had more gravitational pull than, you know, the moon or something like that. He made the conversation. So my point is that compost and the affecting the pH would be much greater than a small amount of water. So I don't know, caller, you still there? Okay. That's right. Okay. Well, we've got guesses here. Good morning, Mike. You're first up for the dirt bag. Victoria, you're second up for the dirt bag.
Okay.
You got a guess?
Yes, I do. I'm guessing apples.
That's a very close guess. That's the close second, but no, that's not the answer.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so the question is, as Katie put it, you know, what is the most poundage-wise? What's the fruit that is harvested the most of? Okay. 503-231-8187. Back to the fruit tree project here. You said that your volunteers take away half, and then you donate half to the Oregon Food Bank, or is that, or
that's
others?
Right.
Are?
Yeah. So volunteers are offered to take up to half, and oftentimes, you know, if we do a really large harvest where their portion of half would be, say, 40 pounds or something like that, oftentimes people take less. So overall, this past year, we harvested about 67,000 pounds of fruit that would have otherwise gone to waste, and about 49,000 ended up going to local food pantries and the Oregon Food Bank.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's great.
So last year it was well over 50%.
Kurt's going to tell me here we've got some people coming onto the line here. Good morning, Jim.
Yes.
You got a guess?
Grapes.
Katie can tell us where that falls.
Well, we do harvest grapes, but I would say that's pretty low on the poundage scale. But it's a great guess because we do harvest quite a few grapes. But nope, that's not the answer.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, good morning, Tim. You have a guess.
Pears.
Ding, 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 ding.
That's it.
You got it.
Pears is the...
I got it. I don't believe it.
Okay, if you give your name to Kurt off the air here, we'll make sure that your name is on the guest list at the Hollywood Theater. So no ticket exchange. You just give him your name at the box office. Stay on the phone, yeah. He'll get it to you. Okay, good. So pears are that doesn't surprise me. Because there are so many pears, and they grow very well in this neck of the woods, I guess.
Do you include Asian pears in that?
We do harvest quite a bit of Asian pears, but those we kind of keep in their own category. Mm-hmm. So that's just European pears. And two reasons why pears are at the top of the list. One is because they're just so heavy. I mean, if you take one pear and one apple, the pear is going to be, well, depending on the variety, but typically it's just a very dense fruit. But primarily the reason is that we actually did a couple large orchard harvests this past year that were pear orchards. So that definitely tipped the scales, because a typical backyard harvesting party will be, you know, 1 to 3, maybe 400 pounds of fruit. But when we go out into a larger scale orchard, we'll be harvesting, you know, in hitting 1,000 or more pounds of fruit when we do a larger glean.
Is there a specific variety that you get a lot of pears?
It really depends on the I would say probably Bartlett's, Bosques. We actually last year or 2 years ago harvested a whole orchard of Donju pears, which are delicious, but they're less common. So I would say Bosque and Bartlett are probably the most common, but we see all sorts, you know.
Now, we've mentioned apples, pears, and grapes. Mm-hmm. What else are you picking?
Asian pears, we mentioned. A lot of plums and figs. We also pick some vines. We talked about grapes and kiwis. What am I missing? Cherries. I think that's most of them.
Are most of these trees that you pick from just kind of... untended during the rest of the year?
It sort of runs the gamut.
Okay.
I would say the majority have typically been untended, but we do have a number of tree owners who do care for their trees quite a bit. About 3 years ago, we were able to start our fruit tree stewardship program, which, Glenn, you've been quite involved with, helping to teach workshops and such.
That's right, I have.
And essentially, we started this program because we recognize that the majority of the trees that we harvest and aren't being harvested by their owners also aren't being cared for by their owners. So oftentimes it's either because the owners just lack the skills and are maybe interested in caring for their own trees but don't know how. But oftentimes folks just simply don't have the time or aren't physically able to care for the trees or maybe just frankly aren't that interested.
Yeah.
Whatever the reason, a lot of folks aren't caring for their trees. So we do two things. We teach a series of tree care workshops every year on a bunch of different topics all throughout the year, different seasons, to help folks who want to learn to care for their trees do so. And then we also have our Tree Care Teams program, which is sort of like an intensive service learning program where it's over the course of 10 months, folks join a tree care team. They get hands-on instruction on different topics of tree care. And then as a team, they actually go out and perform that tree care. So winter pruning, pest and disease management, summer pruning, fruit thinning, all that sort of thing. So it's a way for folks to both learn about tree care and then for us to provide some volunteer tree care services for trees that have really high potential of producing food for the community but just aren't being cared for otherwise.
Do you have room for more, that's a silly question, for more volunteers on both ends?
We do.
How about that?
We're always welcoming new tree owners to volunteer to share their fruit. The Tree Care Teams program I mentioned is a 10-month program. It begins in January. So we're not bringing on new volunteers for that program right now, but we will at the end of this calendar year. But we also have... what we call work and learn parties at our community orchards, which are events where folks can come out and get sort of just really basic level of learning and then help do orchard maintenance. that day. They're at the Sabin Community Orchard in Northeast Portland. They're monthly. We have a new community orchard in North Portland, and those work parties have been more like every couple weeks, but they'll probably slow down now that the orchard has been planted. And then we have our workshops that anyone can come out to. And then our harvest season begins in late June sometimes, but usually more like mid-July, depending on the weather and all that stuff, and goes through the end of November. So there are lots of opportunities to come out and harvest with us. This year, last year we did 88 harvesting events in total. This year we're planning to do 95. So lots of opportunities to come out and volunteer.
And if this weather continues like we're having, you're going to have great
it's
crops.
Be June,
yeah.
Right.
So many fruit ripening this year set on our trees. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and last year was an incredible year for fruit production as well. So yeah, we'll see.
How many community orchards are there now?
We currently manage 3 community orchards. There's a Sabin Community Orchard on Northeast 18th and Mason that was planted in 2010. And then we have one in Southeast at the Learning Gardens Laboratory site. That orchard is called the Green Thumb Community Orchard. It's at 57th and Cooper. That is our largest orchard. It's about an acre, there are about 60 trees there. And then the new orchard that we just broke ground on at the beginning of April is up in North Portland near the Charles Jordan Community Center. It's adjacent to 2 Home Forward apartment complexes, and that is about half an acre. We have about 40 trees planted, and we're in the midst of planting, so there'll be a few more.
Well, it's a great organization. That's the Portland Fruit Tree Project. Katie Kolker, how can people contact you, or what's the best way to get involved, either with trees or with hands?
Yeah, so all the things that I just mentioned are on our website, which is www.portlandfruit.org. You can find out information there, as well as by calling our office, and that number is 503-284-6106. You can also shoot an email to info@portlandfruit.org.
Or you can come to the Fruit Hunters film tomorrow night, and Katie will be part of the panel.
That's right.
That's following that film.
Yeah, and we'll also have a little info table outside.
Oh,
and
great.
Someone will be there to answer questions as well. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today. And if you want to stick around, if you have questions on fruit growing or the project, give us a call, 503-231-8187. Well, let's go to a music break now. We'll do there's an old tune. You know, I've got old tunes. You know that, Jim. This is Grinder Switch. I didn't have anything about picking fruit, but this is called Picking the Blues.
All right.
Oh, no, this is...
No.
We got the wrong one there. See, I've screwed Kurt up here because I'm taking things out of order. Well, he's getting it right, though. Picking the Blues. Picking the Fruit. Okay, I'm back with Jim Gilbert and Katie Kolker. You're listening to The Dirt Bag. This is Glenn Andreessen. Okay, this is not the garden stumper, but do you know technically what one zucchini is called? I mean, you wouldn't say, I have one zucchini.
You wouldn't?
No, not technically. No, that's not right either. No.
Zucchina.
That's right.
Really?
One zucchina.
That was totally a wild guess.
All right, you get another pair of tickets.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. One zucchini is called zucchina.
Amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Now, so we're on to the plant of the month here. The zucchini is the what I'm going to be talking about here. And feel free to chime in with your experience of growing one zucchina or zucchini.
It's kind of hard to just grow one.
True. That's true. And I'll talk about that because sometimes we have poor pollination with zucchini. Maybe you've seen misshapen zucchini, you know, that's skinny at one end or bulging in at one side and not others. But we'll get there eventually here. But let me ask the second garden stumper of the day.
All right.
Part two. No. Okay, this is the second garden stumper here. Archaeologists have traced the origins of summer squash or zucchini to where? In other words, where did it come from? From where did the zucchini come? All right, that's it. If you know the answer to that question, 503-231-8187.
That wasn't my grandmother's garden, right?
No. It could be true, but I don't know how old she is, but it's a little older than that. Right. Now, did you know, this is what I found fascinating, that one zucchini has more potassium than a banana? Hmm. We always talk about that.
But
yeah.
I think it's one zucchina.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's right. I should just say a zucchina has more potassium than a banana.
I'm a language student, Glenn, so sorry.
It's coming in handy here. Yeah. I'm giving you plenty of practice. One zucchini has only 25 calories as compared to like a potato that has 130. So packed full of those nutrients. But the key here is teeny zucchini. We want to harvest them before they're large. You know, they're almost tasteless, and about the only thing they're good for then is either playing baseball or, you know, grating them up and putting them into somehow disguising their taste, you know, with fats and sugars, you know, in zucchini bread or zucchini relish or something like that. So, but they're most tasty when they're small, before the seeds have really formed at all. Okay. We've got somebody to take a guess at Garden Stumper 2. Good morning. You're with the Dirtbag. Judy.
Hi.
What's your answer?
Is it South America?
I think we're technically going to have to give it to you. It's really Central America, ranging from Mexico and the northern parts of South America. So, yes.
Yes.
Very good. You will.
All right.
Your name will be on the guest list at the Hollywood Theater for one pair of tickets.
Thank you.
Please stay on the phone, and Kurt will get your contact information.
Okay.
Great. Thanks a lot. Yes, it's dated back to, I don't know how old your grandmother is, but this is 5500 B.C. 5500 B.C. So
a little bit past before her time.
That's right. Integral part of the ancient diet there. But within 50 years of the Europeans invading, we'll say, the Americas, that summer squash were introduced to Europe, and then the Italians kind of developed zucchini at that point and gave it its name now. Sometimes zucchinis, like cucumbers, can have a bitterness to them, and this can result from some of these conditions here, environmental factors such as high temperatures, low moisture, low soil nutrients. So we want to make sure that those get lots of nutrients, fertilizer, or certainly compost. And by minimizing those things, the bitterness compounds will go away or will just not be there then. So now, for pollination purposes, These plants, Jim, you probably have the name for this, that each plant has male and female flowers. What's the name of that?
It's dioecious if it's separate flowers.
Yes, it is separate flowers. Uh-huh. Dioecious. Mm-hmm. That's the word. And part of the reason that we get these misshapen fruits sometimes is just lack of pollination, because we need bees, usually bees, but it can be insects, moving the pollen from the male flower to the female flower. And one way, or the way to tell the difference between the two, is that the males are on skinny stalks. Well, the flowers appear on skinny stalks, whereas the female is stubbier and will have kind of a bulbous, the beginning of a fruit there, but it still needs to be pollinated before it will get the fruit. And it needs plenty of grains of pollen there, because we want them to be fully pollinated so the fruits will be fully germinated and formed. Now, there's a lot of instructions I saw on YouTube. I didn't look at any of them on how to hand pollinate zucchini. I don't have that problem with many beehives in my yard, but there's ways that you can do it. And wouldn't it just be easier to plant lots of things to attract pollinating insects into your garden? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That would be the way to take care of that.
I don't think I ever experienced unformed zucchini, but I suppose it's possible.
Not unlike, sometimes they'll rot at the ends. You know, they just haven't been fully pollinated either. Cucumbers are more bulbous and that way, mm-hmm. lack of pollination. Right in line with the pollination here is sometimes we have to be careful if you're going to save seeds from some of these members of the same family. Like these zucchinis are a member of the Cucurbita pepo family, and there's other cucurbitas, and then there's the family pepo, and then there's others, Maxima and others. But if it's within that pepo, then, and that includes melons, pumpkins, cucumbers, and gourds, they can readily cross-pollinate each other. Won't affect the fruit this year, but if you save the seeds from year to year or for the next year, this is when you get these very unusually shaped fruit, and you would have to isolate them if you're from your neighbors or other things that you're growing that way.
So I could get a zucchinilope?
You could. It seems like most of the time it's the zucchini crosses with maybe acorn squash, and you get just huge, you know, 2 feet long things that are just tasteless. You know, cardboard tastes better than them. So now, just a few more things here on the culture of zucchini here. Pretty easy to grow, as we know. It can be started inside or outside. I think it's perfectly time now that you could plant them outside. Any concurrence on that? Yeah, that's okay. They shake their heads, yes, because it's warm enough. Generally, you know, mid-May would be good, but gosh, if you had planted them 2 weeks ago, you would have been fine. If you would have done a lot of things 2 weeks ago, you would have been fine.
That's right. Record-setting temperatures we've been having, so pretty warm.
We do have some rain coming, but that's not yet there. So one of the things that I have been recommending is to make a second planting of zucchini. The first ones that you'd plant now, May, will start getting powdery mildew and other fungal diseases towards the end of August and into September. It's just very normal. I don't recommend treating for that at all. The plant's defenses are just down, and you know, they're coming to the useful end of their life. And if you make a second planting then starting maybe in July, then you'll have new young plants coming on starting in September with healthy leaves, and they will be able to withstand the onslaught of the fungal spores much better. So give it a try. It's unlikely that you'd find zucchini starts in July, so you probably have to start them from seed. But, and that's it. These are high users of nutrients, so fertilize, compost well, and that's what I've got to say about zucchini.
That's very informative, Glenn.
Okay. Now we'll take our now we can take a musical break. This is called it's called She's Too Young, but I just wanted to put through the idea that We want young zucchini, young zucchini. And this is from a young John Mayall. Okay, we're back here. John Mayall from 1968. Whew. Bear Wires. You know, I have a CD, a CD of his that's it was the 70th birthday concert that he gave. Still sounded like John Mayall. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
70. You're getting there, aren't you, Jim? Oh, let's move on here. Okay, that's Mike, you've been hanging on the phone patiently, and we appreciate that. So, good morning. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yes, I'm a patient man, Jim, and Glenn and Alice. Hey, I have a question. It's a little off topic, but it has to do with clean water and clean soil. Now, this fluoride proposition that's coming up for the people that consume Bull Run water, if this water is fluoridated, fluorine is it attaches very tightly to soil particles. Thus, it will accumulate in soils. Fertilizer companies take fluorine out of phosphate fertilizers for a very good reason. What's your information regarding fluorine in soils?
Well, you're the second call today on that. Maybe you weren't here at the beginning of the show.
Part.
Yeah. So to recap, let's see, mine was, well, I don't know. And Jim's was, I don't know. No, that's not true. We had a little bit more than that. But
yeah, there's really,
we don't know.
Yeah.
We haven't followed it. I mean, it's so small of amount that, I would think that you have a greater concern with paint from your house than this.
Yeah. Well, we're just, we're kind of locked into using water in Portland that's could possibly be fluoridated. And the fact that it accumulates in soil is the great concern to me.
Yeah, I haven't read anything about that on other communities where this has been, they've had the water.
That's the scientific evidence that I've looked up and found going just right to fluorine. Google it, Wikipedia, and it does bind tightly to soil, and it is.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well,
I mean, that might be better than it going into the waters, or I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
The fact that it's a salt concerns me regarding all the microorganisms living in the soil.
Yeah.
They're going to be affected by this, and it could be just minute amount of fluorine that start to affect those populations.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly, we need to.
My bone contention with this whole thing, and I hope people will give that at least some thought. And thank you for your time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thanks for calling, Mike.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we still don't know the answer to that. Okay, Jim, this weather has been July and May.
It's amazing. It's like I've been telling people, oh, welcome to a nice warm day in July. You know, yeah. It's, you know, everything, shorts, short sleeve shirts, straw hat. I mean, yeah. It's been very interesting. And one of my concerns has been of people planting container plants this time of year. Normally, last year, we had a very wet spring. It was just the opposite. If I could think of an opposite weather phenomena last year and this year, they're apples and oranges. But the concern I have with folks planting container plants is that you will put them in the ground, and of course it's important to loosen up the root system and to cover, make sure that
put them in pots?
Plants from pots going into the ground.
Okay.
Yeah. It could be also from pot to pot as well, but the main thing is if you put it in the ground and you get your root system loosened up, put soil in around it, and everything seems copacetic, it's really important to watch the water. If you can water the surface of the ground surrounding the plant and actually not get water where it's necessary, which for at least a couple of weeks is the center, right, where the old potting soil is, because that can dry out. Those roots that put in the ground aren't going to make connection with the soil and begin to pull water up for at least a couple of weeks.
And typically it's potting soil, which is very porous.
Drains fast.
Right.
Yep. And so you can end up with a plant that dries out on you despite your watering efforts this kind of weather.
We've had, I think, May typically around 2.5 inches of rain for the month. And I don't think we've had any. We haven't had any this month. Yeah, there's a trace, but that doesn't count.
So
we're almost a third of the way done with the month here with, you know, apparently there is some rain coming.
I can't speak also too strongly about the use of mulch. That will really help keep the soil moist and from keep it from baking. I mean, if you've got bare soil and those kind of weather we just had, you can really get some hard pan on the surface. That will keep water from penetrating for a while till it's just so hard. So mulch is excellent. You know, straw, even sawdust, depending upon what kind of plants you're putting in, something to keep the ground cooler and more moist. And
compost would be compost my mulch of choice.
Yeah.
Well, this is generally mid-May is pretty much safe to plant really anything. Maybe it'll wait a little longer than that for eggplant and peppers and things like that. Or what I'm going to try this year, my friends at Garden Fever mentioned that they have been, for the last 1 year, or maybe just last year, they started putting their peppers and eggplants into larger pots and rather than in the ground. And they had their best production ever. And I guess it's just too cold, too long in the soil here. We need to get them going sooner. But you have to take care of that then. But I'm going to try that in any event. Plant some outside, put some in pots, and then do the old compare.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So we'll see. I did put in my tomatoes the other day, and I think you could seed just about anything now.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. Corn, squash, cucumbers, seed them or transplant them outside. I feel safe that we're really out of the woods as far as freezing temperatures and even cold temperatures. I mean, look at the 15, 20-day forecast, which is just an educated guess, of course. But, there was one day where the high was 57, but all the other ones were in the 60s, 70s, or 80s.
84, three days ago. But unfortunately, there was actually out in the country where we are, we had a frost about a week ago.
Uh-huh.
Which was
back then. Yeah, that's right. We did have some of those early. But
out in the country, but it was, of course, anybody living in town.
It was still 35 or so, which would not be good for, any of the warm season crops.
Sad thing about those frosts, depending upon the plants and the development of the flowers and fruit and all that, we got down to 30 at our place, and it killed pawpaw flowers.
Uh-oh. Bummer. But that reminds us that it's time for the third part.
I thought that might be a good segue.
for the garden stumper here. And this comes courtesy of Jim.
Okay. Well, so my question.
Yeah, here we go. We've got to have the theme.
The theme, that's right.
Okay, once again, this is for a pair of tickets to The Fruit Hunters at the Hollywood Theater. tomorrow, 7:30.
And interestingly, as a small segue here, is that the Fruit Hunters movie is a lot about tropical fruit. And the pawpaw is a hardy escape, in a sense, of a type of many, of a family of tropical fruits.
Oh, but the pawpaw is native to,
It's native to the United States, even it goes in southern Canada. And it grows along the eastern seaboard and the Midwest.
When we say it grows there, he means wild.
It's wild. Native, yeah, it's native. It grows here, but it's native to those regions. And very interesting fruit with a very tropical-like flavor and a custard-like texture. So now that your mouths are starting to water, the garden stumper is pawpaws are in bloom right now. And what color is the flower and how are they pollinated?
Mm-hmm. So a two-parter.
Uh-huh.
Two-part question.
And to win the tickets, I think they have to get both parts correct.
And we'll give hints if it doesn't happen right away. Okay. Well, as I mentioned, let's just take our next little musical break here, and we'll come back with what's going on in the bee colony. It is going to rain, and that's what this is called. It's going to rain. Starting Sunday, I think. This guy's got a great name here. He's the artist here. This comes from a CD called New Orleans Funk. But the artist is Gentleman June Gardner. That's great.
Yeah, it's good music.
Yeah, Gentleman June Gardner. May Gardner, too. Not Gardener, but Gardner.
And my partner, Lorraine Gardner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gentleman June Gardner, yeah.
I'd be out dancing in the rain. That kind of music.
Okay, well, boy, this is, speaking of, do we have any, I don't think we have any gardening questions out there, do we now? No. Okay, well, if you do, we still got a little bit of time, 503-231-8187. This is a very busy time for honeybees. There has been a lot of publicity about honeybee swarms. I don't know that there's been any more than normal, but it seems like the media is saying that there's a lot more. Maybe they're just covering it and things like that, but it's just swarm season, and when it's warm, then they swarm. Today, we probably won't have any swarms because it's not as warm, but it's not unusual for me and my partner, Tim, to get, I don't know, 8 or 10 calls a day about swarms, but then that's just what happens this time of year. Mm-hmm. The swarm, I probably mentioned this before, too, is when the old queen leaves with maybe up to half the bees. It's perfectly normal. It indicates that you've got a healthy colony. There's healthy food supply. The bees are – there's a lot of bees inside the colony, just too many, really, although that's not really what causes the swarm, but that's a symptom of it. The queen will leave. She's not a great flyer. She lands someplace, and then these thousands of bees will congregate around her. Meanwhile, they'll send out scouts to look for a permanent location, and they will try to find a cavity of some sort, at least the size of maybe a 5-gallon bucket. It's larger. It could be the colony or a hole of a tree, a chimney, a wall void, something like that. And usually that's when I get the call, when they're just hanging there in the bunch there. But so the inside the colony, the queen is just laying. She's at her peak about now, laying 1,500, maybe 2,000 eggs a day. Do the math there. You know, that's 50 an hour. It's quite a bit. It's more than that, isn't it? No, that'd be about right. More than 50 an hour. So one a minute. 24 hours a day now.
It's amazing.
And they are, this is prime honey gathering or nectar gathering time too. Although we are in a little dearth right now. The fruit trees have pretty much finished blooming. The maples are pretty much done. But it's before the major berries have come on, the raspberries, wild blackberries, particularly wild blackberries. But the Marians and the raspberries now are just starting to open a little earlier this year. Would you say, Jim, you've seen, what would you be your?
Everything, I mean, I'd say 2 weeks ahead of, or at least 2 weeks ahead of last year, maybe three.
Yeah. Well, I tell what I judge by is when I move my bees to a blueberry farm for pollination. Mm-hmm. And my blueberry farmer wants them there when there's about 10 or 15% bloom open. Well, that's when I want them there too. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want them there too soon because they'll find other places to get nectar, and he doesn't want them there too late because then he'll miss out on the honeybee pollination. And so it's pretty consistent from year to year, and we've done this about 15 years. And so I moved them in this year, I think, on April 23rd. And last year it was May. No, it was about April last year, too, April 23rd. But the year before, I think it was May 7th or 8th, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, plants, they just respond to the environmental factors. And
well, when I think about the weather we have here versus what it is back east, you know, it's so weird. I mean, my friends in Midwest, north had snow, the southern parts rain, terrible amount. You know, I mean, just like reverse. You know,
well, we'll get ours. So. I made the comment to my wife the other day that in the paper it says what the temperature was last year, and our high at that day was 54 last year, and then the high this year that day was 80. So when you know average those together, it was about what the average temperature is for this time of year. So it's good we call it average rather than normal.
Right.
Right. Okay, let's go back to the phones and see what we've got. Good morning, Ron.
If you need assistance.
Oh, boy, do I. Okay, anybody else? Okay, well, we're still looking for an answer to the Garden Stumper quiz for the pair of tickets, and that is what color is the flower of pawpaws, the bloom, and how are they pollinated? Well, there's not that many choices. We'll give one away, and we'll say that it's not humans.
Yes, that's true.
Have you ever done that with pawpaws?
Yes.
Okay. Normally, then.
doing it right now, or not this very moment. Yeah. But
you have been doing some?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. It's interesting. I don't think I'm giving away the answer by...
Well, it's okay. We can give hints now.
Okay. Well, the flower is a perfect flower with male and female parts.
And what's that called?
A monoecious.
Monoecious. Okay. Very good.
Yes. Thank you. And so the female part of the flower is receptive before the male part opens. And so a given flower, the very first flowers that open can't get pollinated because there's no male pollen. So what we do, but they also require cross-pollination from another variety, so they're not self-fertile.
Uh-huh.
So we'll go collect male pollen from a different tree in a little container of some sort, and then take it to the other one and find female flowers that are receptive before the male flower part mm-hmm. is opened, and mm-hmm. then dust the pollen onto those flowers.
Okay. Well, maybe it's time for a hint then. We better give a hint. We're just about out of time here.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not bees.
It's not
that
bees.
Pollinate these. So we have time for one caller, don't we, Kurt? 503-231-8187. So we're looking to the color and what pollinates a pawpaw. Whew. We're going to be right up in...
We'll have to carry that over to the next show.
Yeah, we'll have more tickets, I think, for that, too. I think we've arranged them for every show up until when the series is done. So
we've already given the clue. So, you know, I mean, people will be on Google, I'm sure, within seconds.
Well, we've reached the end here. Jim Gilbert, thank you very much for coming,
always
as usual.
A pleasure. Nice to be with you.
Katie Kolker, pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thanks for
having
me.
With the Portland Fruit Tree Project. Look for both of them tomorrow following the, well, or before, too, the Fruit Hunters at the Hollywood Theater. I'll be there, too. Come up, say hello. Actually, I won't be up there, but I'll be talking to these guys. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll be back in 5 weeks, June 12th. That's the same day of the Hollywood Theater's production, and that is called Elemental. Give you more information about that, too. Thanks for listening. Be well. Lakes near enough to feed New York till 1973. Cultivation is my station, and the nation buys my call for me immediately. And holding $60,000, I watch his dump of trucks to New York. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at our carbon-neutral Eco Brew Pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia, information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. This KBOO program was also brought to you by One Green World, a nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. Now located in Portland at 6469 Southeast 134th. For a color catalog, the number is 1-877-353-4028 or online at onegreenworld.com. And finally, this program was brought to you in part by The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd Avenue, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 12:01. Coming up next is Jazz Lives with your host, Nick Geffro.
This is KBOO News at noon for May 8, 2013.
The companies the government has hired to clean up the Hanford site work under a contract with the federal government that provides no incentive for reporting problems. This is added to an already dangerous situation and is typical of the federal government's decade-long practice of discouraging reports that expose problems. One company that worked the site for a year routinely ignored mounting evidence of a major leak of some of the most radioactive and chemically contaminated waste in the world. There are lots of hard-working, decent people who are trapped in a corrupt system that discourages openness and honesty, says Bob Alvarez, a former presidential advisor on nuclear policy.
Many of Portland citizens are voting on whether to add fluoride to our drinking water to help prevent tooth decay. Portland City Council voted to add fluoride, but opponents rallied to put it on the May ballot. However, nearly one-third of the Water Bureau's 900,000 customers live outside the city and will not have any say. 19 cities, including Gresham, Tigard, and Tutelaine, buy their water from Bull Run Reservoir, and their contract with the Water Bureau allows the Bureau to change the water without asking.
The Forest Service is proposing a ban on camping in some areas of Lane County, used by homeless people in the summer. Their seasonal camps, typically close to freshwater streams, often result in human waste and garbage being left behind, sometimes in the water. The purpose of the ban will be to move the camping away from streams known for their freshwater quality. The ban will limit camping to 14 days in one spot, the point at which human waste and trash often become a significant problem and vegetation becomes so damaged that it cannot recover.
It was recently discovered that the CIA has been giving Afghanistan President Karzai bags of cash on a regular basis in exchange for favorable treatment. This is embarrassing to the U.S. for a number of reasons. It confirmed reports that Karzai could be running a corrupt government with help from the U.S. and that we are bribing the man who we helped install as president. In spite of the extreme criticism that erupted, the CIA assured Karzai that it will continue the practice. According to Karzai, the money is a source of petty cash, and some of it is used to pay off the political elite, a group dominated by tribal warlords.
Israel's chief negotiator welcomed the Arab League's decision to sweeten a decade-old initiative, offering comprehensive peace with Israel, in hopes this would help get peace talks back on track after years of delay. Changes in the latest proposal would allow Israel to keep parts of the West Bank and East Jerusalem. The justice minister, formerly a foreign minister for Israel, is known to support broad concessions to the Palestinians and is eager to restart peace negotiations. Netanyahu says he wants to begin talks but has given no indication that he's prepared to make any of the concessions that are being demanded. The justice minister said while she had reservations about some of the plan's details, the decision represented an important message and she expected Israel to respond positively.
This is Diane Erickson and Patrick Wilson with the KBOO News at Noon in Portland, Oregon. Tune in every night at 5 o'clock for more local, national, and international news. Thanks for listening.
And it's time for Jazz Liz with yours truly, Nick Geffro. Let's get started with Jackie McLean right here on the Rose City, 90.7 FM.